Hello, everyone. Welcome to Shakya Presents Movie Night. I am your host. My name is Rudy Obias, and joining me is...
Harry Nemiroff.
And so today we're going to be talking about two movies that are coming out this Friday on September 16th. These are two very violent films, and I find it interesting that they're both coming out at the same time with this heavy look at violence in movies, or just very violent movies altogether. The first movie that we're going to be talking about is Straw Dogs. This is the remake of the 1971 film by one of my favorite filmmakers, Sam Peckinpah. And this is an adaptation of the screenplay and also the book that it's based on. Here's a little synopsis from IMDb.com. L.A. screenwriter David Sumner relocates with his wife to her hometown in the Deep South. There, while tensions build between them, a brewing conflict with locals becomes a threat to them both. So going into this movie, I'm actually a huge fan of the original film, and I was really trying to divorce myself from my affection for that film in watching this film, and so I can be a little bit more objective, because I want to really be fair to every movie that I see. Perry, have you seen the original 1971 version of Straw Dogs?
I have not, and I purposely kept it that way until now, at least, so that I wouldn't write a review and constantly be comparing the two and judge this one on its own, which still didn't do it much justice.
Yeah, I mean, that's generally my approach to writing a review, is really wanting to be fair, even if it is a remake of something else or a sequel of something else. I really want to be fair to the movie that was made, because people spent so much time writing and acting and editing these films together that I feel that they deserve at least a little bit more attention, just because there's effort put in. So I will put effort in and try to be objective. So in saying that, Perry Nemiroff, what are your thoughts on Straw Dogs, 2011 version of Straw Dogs?
As a horror lover who has some fun watching the, you know, the grand finale where, like, everyone's brutalized, I had a good time with this, but on an emotional level, there is just nothing there whatsoever. So much of this plot is nonsensical. I'm even more impressed by the fact that I enjoyed the grand bloodbath that much.
Yeah, this movie, the way it starts off, is pretty melodramatic. And it really is, it's building tension between this couple and this town and the people in this this Deep South town, really rural, really like close-knit kind of community. And it really takes a lot to get into, in my opinion. And I think overall the performances were pretty over the top and broad. There was not much subtlety in this movie at all, in my opinion. But when it does get to the final breakdown, because this character played by James Marsden is getting kind of tortured, like psychologically tortured and bullied throughout the whole movie, and by his wife and then the her old friends, and it's all building to this kind of a grand finale. And when it gets to that grand finale, you do have a lot of fun while watching it, because the way it is shot and the way it's put together, it's fun. I agree with you there that this is a, you know, at least the last 20 minutes of this movie is a great horror film, but it does take a lot to get into that. What are your thoughts on the two leads in this film, played by James Marsden and Kate Bosworth?
I thought their performances were fine in terms of what they had to work with, but what really drags their characters down is the beginning portion of the film, which is basically just waiting in nothingness until we get to this final event that we know is coming anyway. And, I mean, you mentioned that it builds tension, but the problem I had was that it didn't build any tension at all. And, you know, Rod Lurie is so obviously trying to throw in these little hints that violence is brewing, that none of it really had much of an effect. It didn't build any tension. It's like, I knew it was coming. These little jabs were so blatant that it just lacked the subtlety that builds that anticipation.
Yeah.
Which, again, makes me surprised that I like the ending so much.
Well, I think it definitely got to a point for me where it became laughable. Like, when they were arguing about, are you going to call these people out about who killed our cat? Like, them having this back and forth and, like, kind of an argument about this cat seemed to be pretty laughable, in my opinion, just because
that whole scenario was such nonsense.
Yeah, like, and that's supposed to really build tension. Again, we see a dead cat hanging in their closet, and that's a pretty horrifying thought, but to me, when they're arguing about that, it just seems pretty laughable. And again, I'm trying to really divorce myself from my feelings from the original film and to this one. And on its own merits, you know, it's a very slow film. And when it gets to the grand finale, it does work in a way. And so I'm a little bit more positive than a lot of other film critics who are just flat out comparing it to the original film. It works on its own merits in that way. But I feel that reward didn't justify basically like an hour of just really silly back and forth between characters.
It really is a wonder that that ending works at all, because even the situation that's kind of fueling it is so absurd too that it really has no basis. But I mean, I guess that's the horror lover inside of me, that I can appreciate a unique and exciting kill without any real value to it.
Yeah, and that's really what the last end of this film is. What I think a lot of people will take away from this movie is the last 20, 25 minutes of the movie, where it is just a bunch of kills. And they're pretty exciting, and, you know, it really gets the crowd going, and because you're just watching this character get bullied throughout the whole film, and he's having his comeuppance right now. But I think at the end of the day, this film really doesn't say as much about what violence is and how audiences view violence as much as Sam Peckinpah's version of Straw Dogs.
This film doesn't say anything at all about that. The film doesn't say anything, I mean, about anything, really. It's for shock value and nothing more. And this actually, for me, puts something like the new Last House on the Left in a better light, because I think now that I have this to compare that to, I feel like I had a really honest reaction to that, even though I was somewhat disgusted at some of the movie. That's the kind of reaction that this should have evoked.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. What's it called? Alexander Sarsgaard, who plays Charlie, who's kind of like the leader of this gang of quote unquote hillbillies and rednecks. He has this kind of I don't want to say somewhat of a charm, because I watch True Blood, so it's kind of hard for me to, you know, again, divorce what I see of him and then how I see Eric in True Blood, who is pretty charismatic. And, you know, I think Alexander Sarsgaard himself is pretty charismatic on the screen. I was just waiting throughout the whole movie for his fangs to just, like, emerge and him wreak havoc on people. What were your thoughts on Alexander Sarsgaard's performance in this movie?
His performance, let alone his character, is actually kind of similar to Eric. I mean, I guess this is going to be a little spoiler for people who haven't seen all the seasons of True Blood, but at one point his character kind of does a 180 and goes from being a violent vampire to someone with a softer side. And we see both of those here. And whereas in True Blood, that quick turnaround is warranted because of what makes him that way, here there's no arc at all. I believe I wrote in my review, like, he has a character arc. He starts somewhere and ends somewhere else, but there's kind of like this gaping hole in the middle where he makes no transition. He just goes from being a nice guy and then becomes an absolute jerk.
Yeah, I think that middle ground that you're talking about would probably be just come from, like, these glossy stares across the bar at her, you know, and you do get this impression that he still has feelings for Kate Bosworth's character Amy, but I think that, like, a lot of his stuff was just not really effective. I mean, he does a good job of playing this villain pretty well, and definitely at times he's pretty despicable, but again, I'm going to compare to the original Straw Dogs, where I just think it's just more meatier in that. And it's hard for me to... because the source material is there, because the book was highly regarded and that first film was highly regarded. It just to me, they really do nothing with this material outside of hitting the plot points. It's as if they really didn't want to have the essence of any of the two source materials. They just followed basically the Wikipedia entry of it, just really hitting the plot points rather than having any substance or feeling behind any of it.
Mm-hmm. Some of the cast really manages to work well with this, though. Like, even though Skarsgård's transformation wasn't as smooth as I would have liked, he does a good job with what he has, as does James Marsden, who I think is just an absolute natural in anything he does, which is part of the reason some of this movie at least worked for me, is that he's just so instantly likable and he's so honest, and you believe him to a point. Not to say that Kate Bosworth isn't very good in this movie, but she's kind of, I feel like she's an easily replaceable actress. She Yes. does a fine job, but she does a fine job that just about anyone can do. And for the first time ever, I found the fact that she has two different color eyes incredibly distracting.
Yeah, I noticed that too in the movie, and I really never noticed it in any other movies that I've seen her in. And actually, I think she came a long way between this movie and Superman Returns. I absolutely hated her acting in Superman Returns, and I find that interesting that both James Marsden and Kate Bosworth were both in Superman Returns. I fully agree with you. She's really not flourishing as an actress so much. I mean, she kind of just hits, you know, like this paint-by-numbers type of acting. She really doesn't have that much charisma. She's really beautiful and attractive, but that can really take you so far, especially when you're playing a character that's supposed to have, like, these heavy moments, but it just really doesn't come off so well. And in saying that, I thought she was absolutely horrible in Superman Returns, but definitely a little bit better in this movie. Actually, one of my favorite actors in this movie, James Woods. I love James Woods, period, and I'll watch anything with that guy in. His character of this drunken coach, ex-coach, who's just really violent at a drop of a hat or really surly the next moment after. He's a good actor, and so he plays that off really well, and he does play that really just divisive wanting to get a crowd going pretty well, but again, there's really not much to that character, even though there's not really supposed to be much to that character. At times, I feel James Woods comes off as cartoony, but you know, I think that's just him having fun with the material.
I guess that was probably one of the weakest characters in this entire thing, and he is just constantly thrown in our faces, and it stems from a problem that happens with every single character in this film, is that there's not enough backstory anywhere. We don't even really know why they're relocating to this place. Like, yes, James Marsden's character needs to write, but aren't they both fully employed in Hollywood? Like, are they moving permanently? We don't get any of that. There's no information given whatsoever about the history between Kate Bosworth's character and Alexander Skarsgård. So I don't really know if what they had way back when was honest. And with this coach character, James Woods' character, I mean, something must have happened where he becomes so protective over his daughter, where I mean, he's willing to hurt just about anybody to keep her safe. But none of this has any value because I don't really understand where any of these people are coming from.
Yeah, and I think you just really summed up the whole movie altogether, that there really isn't that much value in this movie outside of thrilling kills at the end of the movie, where the last thing that you're going to remember from this movie is that grand finale, the last 20-25 minutes of the movie where it's just full-out violence and mayhem. I think that's the last thing you're going to walk away with. I mean, if the whole movie was that way, then this would be a horror film, but because there's so much really bad dialogue and pretty serviceable acting, and it has to come off as a little bit more than that. So I guess what's your final verdict on Straw Dogs? Can you recommend this to people listening to this right now?
Well, posting my review from Shakya onto Rotten Tomatoes earned it a rotten review from me.
Really?
But at the same time, yeah, at the same time, though, you know, if you're somewhat like me in that you have an appreciation and you can have fun with that type of kill scene, it could be worth it to sit through it. I mean, I'm kind of like caught in the middle. I can name a whole ton of people I would say do not see this, avoid it at all costs, and then I could pick out a few people that, you know, might enjoy it and might find that grand finale worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that the last bit of this movie is actually really well done and worth seeing, but I feel it's kind of fleeting because everything leading up to it doesn't really have that kind of oomph that you know I would want, or I think anyone would want, to make it a little bit more meaningful and impactful, which I think that's what they're supposed to go for. I mean, it's fun to see a guy get his head trapped in a bear trap. That's funny. Seeing someone's hands getting nailed together with a nail gun is pretty brutal. And there is a lot of blood in this movie, a lot of blood, like buckets and buckets of blood. And if you're a big fan of stuff like that, I guess I would recommend see another movie and then sneak into this with the last 20 minutes of the movie playing. And or when this comes out on DVD, just automatically skip to that last part of the movie. Another movie that's coming out this week, which I feel is the movie that you should see and not Straw Dogs, is Drive. Here's a synopsis from IMDb.com. A Hollywood stunt driver who moonlights as a wheelman discovers that a contract has been put on him after a heist has gone wrong. So this movie is actually getting a lot of good critical reception from our colleagues, who generally say this is either A, the best movie of the year, or it's really up there with one of the best movies of the year. It stars Ryan Gosling, who plays this Hollywood stuntman, and Carey Mulligan is in this movie, who plays his love interest. And much to my surprise, Albert Brooks is in this movie, who's usually a more comic actor playing really this despicable, horrible mobster. Perry, what are your thoughts on Drive? What are your thoughts on Drive altogether?
I had an absolute blast with this movie. I'm not going to go and say it's cracking my top 10 just yet, but I mean, that's not to say this isn't a fantastic film. I love the fact that Refn's stroke is kind of all over this. It's like screaming that a really stylistic director had his hand on this. And it turns something, it creates something that's just incredibly different. And that in itself makes it a really intriguing movie. And talk about, after going from Straw Dogs, talk about character development here. With a lead character that says so little in this movie. We know Ryan Gosling's, he's unnamed in the film, but let's just call him Driver for now. Driver is just so rich. We see every single layer to him, and he's incredibly terse. The same really goes for Bryan Cranston's character, Albert Brooks's, Ron Perlman's. They're not the leads. They're in only a small portion of the film, but they're incredibly rich, and based on the presentation that Refn gives them, they almost, to me, seem like they could warrant their own films.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw this movie, my first thoughts of it were, have you seen Quentin Tarantino's Death Proof?
Perry? Yes, I have.
When I first saw Drive, I thought that this should have been what Death Proof should have been like. A movie filled with rich characters, with a lot of quiet moments, but when they do talk to each other, it's great dialogue, and then tension building up to a really horrific, violent sequence, or a really great car chase sequence. And for that, this is what I thought Death Proof should have been like. This movie is absolutely wonderful. I was actually really surprised by this movie. This is the first movie that I've seen from filmmaker Nicholas Winding Refn. Is that how you pronounce his name? And I'm on board. I'm a fan. I want to check out more of his work. Ryan Gosling as the driver in this movie, yeah, he's very quiet. Like, a lot of the things that you get from him would just be of glances, or just how he moves, or just conveys his emotions outside of words. But when he has these fits of violence, or when he's driving a car, that's where the emotion comes from. The violence in this movie, as opposed to Straw Dogs, actually has meaning behind it, and it feels more visceral because we are attached to these characters because they do come off as likable or somewhat interesting, where in Straw Dogs, the characters are just really vanilla and bland. I like Drive quite a bit. It's actually, at this moment, in my top five movies of 2011. I think it's firmly there at number five. I think one of my big criticisms of this movie is the plotting of it wasn't as engaging as the character moments or the car chase sequences were. If that was a little bit nailed down a little bit more, this definitely would have been a lot higher in my ranking. Perry, what are your thoughts on the plotting of this movie, story-wise?
That was actually what kept me from just full-out loving this and potentially giving it an A in my review. I felt a little detached from the details. Like, at times, I wasn't entirely sure what was going on. I didn't quite see the connection between the whole stock car racing thing and all the mob issues. But, I mean, just getting to know these characters was so rewarding that it overshadowed that enough that I still thoroughly enjoyed it, and I was on board with Gosling's mission throughout the entire film. Back to a point you made before with the death being meaningful, I'm going to give you a major spoiler right here, so close your ears if you have not seen the film. But one death that really got me was Christina Hendricks' character, Blanche, who is in the film for, what, maybe 5-10 minutes, but yeah. When she gets it, like, my heart just sank. And she's not even portrayed in that likable of a way, but I was taken aback by that.
Yeah, complete 180 from her character in Mad Men. And actually, when I went into this movie, when this movie started, I was waiting for Christina Hendricks to emerge on the screen. And when really, I mean, if Christina Hendricks really wasn't as big as she is on Mad Men, I don't want to say anyone could have played this role, but her role isn't as pronounced as one would think it would be. But the way she quote-unquote gets it in this movie is pretty brutal and does kind of come out of nowhere, but very well done, I thought. I mean, it's that old saying, three great scenes make a great movie. Like, three memorable scenes make a great long-lasting movie. I can argue that there are at least six or seven great scenes in this movie. And a lot of it is just built with tension and great dialogue or just wonderful characters, and that's what really sells this movie for me, are these characters and this charisma from Ryan Gosling, who doesn't even really say much, but you get the impression that you're on his side and you're rooting for him every step of the way. I love the way this movie starts off, you know, him on a phone to someone mysterious and him listening to this basketball game, and then him driving through the streets of Los Angeles planning this getaway and them getting away from the cops, and very well and thought out chasing that doesn't, It's not thrilling. It's just really smart the way they get away in that first bit of the movie. And I just feel the whole movie plays out that way, that he's a smart driver and not really an emotional driver. And therefore, his persona is more smart and calculating than emotional.
It's really incredible how many details are meaningful here. Like, everything in his room at the beginning, too. I mean, things are there for a reason, and you might not realize it from the start or why he's doing certain things, but then by the end of the movie, if not just the scene, you realize that everything has a value to what these characters are doing. And I got to talk to Refn the other day myself, and it's really incredible that he can create something so complicated that's, I'm for the most part, very understandable, because he works in, at one point he tells me he didn't have a script. He kind of changes everything as it goes along. And the fact that this thing comes together as well as it does is just absolutely incredible. And visually, this is quite the achievement too. If you haven't checked out the posters for this film, you need to, because there are things that you would like to hang up on your wall. They're gorgeous. And that happens to be the case with a lot of the shots in this film. You could probably, you know, pause this thing every 10 seconds and end up with a frame that's a work of art.
Oh, yeah. Like the stuff, the backstage at a strip club, all that stuff looked gorgeous. I mean, outside of the strippers, I guess, and the stuff at the pawn shop outside waiting for this heist to happen, and that stuff looked absolutely great as well. I haven't been to Los Angeles in years, but you see LA in such a way that you really don't see in movies. You know, you see it in probably what it feels like to actually live there and not in a Hollywood kind of way. And for that, I really appreciate it. And even right down to the fonts of this movie, I love the font of the title card drive, and all the credits in this movie have this really great pink kind of 80s type of font that goes really well with the soundtrack and score of this movie. That's something I really took away from it too, is just the score and what it creates, and the sequences in slow motion to these songs is just really, really great. I love Oscar Isaacs in this movie. In this movie, who plays this convict getting out of prison, who's actually the husband of Carey Mulligan's character, and just how he fits into this picture. And that creates another layer of drama that, you know, this movie already has. I fully recommend watching Drive over Straw Dogs.
I am going to go right along with you and say the same. It's funny you brought up the font. I asked him that the other day, and he told me it comes from Risky Business and has something to do with the divide between masculinity and femininity. He said you have such a masculine movie that he thought he needed a feminine font to balance it out.
Ah. See, even the font is the font choice is very thoughtful in this movie. I hope this movie does well. I mean, I don't think it has a wide release as much as Straw Dogs, but I want people to see this movie. I would say also avoid the trailer of this movie. It does give away a lot of really crucial plot points, which, you know, really doesn't mean much unless you see the movie. But I would say just stay away from the trailer, because the trailer feels more like a highlight reel than actually selling you on the movie. Yes, Drive. Very, very great movie. All right, let's wrap up this episode of Shock It Presents Movie Night. Where can we find you online, Perry Nemiroff?
You can find me at shakya.com, movies.com, cinemablend.com, and comingsoon.net. And, of course, you can find me on Twitter. My handle is pnemiroff, P-N-E-M-I-R-O-F-F.
And you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Rudy_Obias. That's RUDIE_OBIAS. Shakya.com, autorcast.com, and everything that is Rudy at RudyObias.com. On the next episode of Movie Night, we're going to be discussing Moneyball. This is a much anticipated movie from screenwriter Aaron Sorkin, starring Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill. I personally look forward to seeing this movie. This is actually one of my most anticipated movies of 2011, and I can't wait to see this movie and discuss it. So closing out this episode of Movie Night, thank you so much for listening to our show. Goodbye.